2020, on which the World Health Organization made the announcement that, in fact, we're dealing with a global pandemic. Tomorrow's the 1st of March, 2021. So basically, it's been the better part of a year that we've been wrestling with this little bug, a virus that has played havoc with our everyday life. And it has been quite the year. It has been a crazy year. Did you ever think in your lifetime that you would go to the grocery store to pick up toilet paper only to find the shelves completely empty? Do you remember that back in the beginning? Or to grab groceries while you're there, bring them home, but have to pause on your front porch to sanitize them before bringing them in the house. And did you ever think that you would become as technically savvy as you are now, having the ability to navigate an online platform like Zoom, so that you can be with friends and family and continue to do your work? It has been a bizarre year. Most of us haven't traveled this year. I had a chance to fly once back in the month of August. Now, it's not uncustomary for me to be at an airport. I'm used to them, especially with my role now as executive director of an organization that works across 5 time zones. When I was at the airport, I was surprised to find how empty the place was back in August. Almost nobody there. And those who were there, because there were some, everybody had face masks on. Well, by then, we were used to that. That was kind of a common scene. But what I hadn't gotten used to, and what I was surprised to see, was some families loading on planes, mom, dad, boys, girls, wearing their, it almost looked like hazmat suits, white suits, from top to bottom, all zipped up. It was a scene almost like from a George Orwell futuristic mall. It was about a year ago in March that Andy Crouch wrote an article. Andy Crouch, previous editor of Christianity Today, he wrote an article in which he laid out a time frame in which we would likely experience this global pandemic that we find ourselves in. And he likened it to three phases. He said it would be very much like a blizzard, and then a winter, and then a prolonged. Blizzard, that was the first 6 to 8 weeks. And what do you do during a blizzard? Nothing. You batten down the hatches, you hunker down, and you simply ride out the storm. And that's what we did for the first, 6, 8, 10 weeks or so. But then we emerged from that, and we slid into what he referred to as the winter, which lasted probably several months for us into the middle of the summertime, a phase or an era in which we learned to develop new practices and new habits in order to cope with our new reality. Said after that we would transition into a longer period, this ice age, the long period in which we would experience economic and social turmoil or upheaval because of the pandemic's effects on our lives. That's where we've been for the rest of the time. And when you consider that we'll spend the best part of 2021 dealing with travel restrictions and getting this vaccine rolled out, in all likelihood, we're going to be pretty close to his prediction of 4 months before we're out of this. It has been a long, cruel thing for most of us. And many of us are tired. We're tired of wearing masks. We're tired of going to work via Zoom. We're tired of keeping our 2 meters distance or bubbling with a small group of people. We want to get out and get back to normal life again. And that may not come fully anytime soon. And friends, that's just the pandemic. Let's not forget there's been other upheaval this year. We've been shocked by some of the stuff that took place south of the border related to a presidential election. Our lives have been kind of knocked off kilter with some profound social movements like Black Lives Matter. And it is not lost on me that as we come to the conclusion of this year, that this congregation has received news in the last week or so that a long-time established leader here is transitioning on. I'm going to spend most of my time today helping us reflect on the broader turmoil. I just wanted to acknowledge that for everyone, but maybe particularly for this congregation in these weeks, this is a time of great upheaval, a time of transition, a time of deep orientation. You might be left wondering, God, where are you in all of this? It was C.S. Lewis who said long ago that God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks to us in our conscience, and he yells in our show you that the ways that God might be directly involved in this pandemic. On the one hand, we're asking ourselves the question, is God directly using a pandemic to discipline his children and grab their attention so that he can lovingly turn their hearts back to him? Is that what he's doing through this global pandemic? Did he bring it about? Or on the other hand, is God simply using a natural occurrence that's already a part of his created order in a redemptive way to accomplish his good in our lives? This second view of the pandemic is a little like the way Joseph saw his brother's treacheries. What you intended for evil, God intended for good. So God may not be creating it. He may not be the author of it, but he certainly doesn't mind coming alongside and using it for his good purposes. And whatever perspective you feel more comfortable with, to a certain degree, it doesn't matter, because in the mystery of God's great economy, those two views kind of merge together. The outcome is somewhat the same. God, it is not unlike God to use forces, dark, destructive forces, to accomplish his good in this world. Which should leave us asking the question, what is God doing in our midst? What change is God trying to bring about? What good thing is he doing in the broader world, in our congregation, homes, in our personal lives? In 2019, the most popular verse according to Bible Gateway and another search engine was John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. And I'm pretty sure about 80% of the people here this morning, likely more, can finish that verse. You know it so well. Do you know what the second most popular verse was in 2019? Based on searches? Jeremiah 29:11. For you know the plans I have for you. Plans to prosper, not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. What a beautiful verse. Compelling, inspiring, it has the power to lift our countenance, inspire us and baptize maybe their self-consumed aspirations or plans for life, and forget that promise was given in the context of deep, deep hurt. And to remind us of that, I would love for us to read together the broader context, the story around that verse this morning. If you have your Bible with you, Jeremiah chapter 29, I will pick up around verse 4 and read certainly to the verse I read seconds ago, probably a little past. I'll go down to about verse 14. Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 4 to 14. I'll give you another second. Beginning at verse 4. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons. Give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it. Because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Yes, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Do not let the prophets and diviners among you deceive you. Do not listen to the dreams you encourage them to have. They are prophesying lies to you in my name. I have not sent them, declares the Lord. This is what the Lord says. When 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my good promise to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back from captivity. I will will gather you from all the nations and places where I have banished you, declares the Lord. And I will bring you back to the place from which I carried you. Now, a little bit of a background here to this story. In the early 6th century B.C., the Babylonian army, under the direction of King or Emperor Nebuchadnezzar, rolled into Palestine. They sacked the city of Jerusalem, and they torched the temple, eventually cutting off the brightest, the best, and the most beautiful of the Hebrews to a far-off place, back to the land of Babylon, where they spent a significant period of time. And when the exiles first arrived in Babylon, there was a different response amongst the exiles. Some of the older ones amongst them, I think, were completely overwhelmed with what they had lost. And all they could do was be nostalgic all day long about what they had left behind, this world that they pined for. And eventually they had to come to the realization that the world they knew back there, Jerusalem with their temple, that world was gone and gone forever. They would never see it in its glory, in the state that they had left it, ever, ever again. There were another group of exiles. My guess is maybe some of the younger ones who hadn't been through crisis before, maybe a little more optimistic, maybe a little ambitious. They listened just a little too closely to the false prophets who were saying, hey, don't worry, we're not going to be in the land long, maybe just a couple years, we'll be back in Jerusalem. The situation into which the prophet Jeremiah got spoken and had to show up and say, basically, don't listen to them, we're lying to them. We're not going anywhere quick. You better settle down and get used to life here in this land, because you are here for a long time, 70 years before the Lord is going to take you back. Get used to it. Now, given our current COVID context, we will be wise to heed the words of Jeremiah. Because like the exiles of old who had been stripped of their land and temple, metaphorically speaking, do we not find ourselves in a similar place today? Stripped of our buildings? Deprived of access to easily gather for worship events? To participate in ministry programs that have been going on for a long time? And very much like the exiles of old, we have responded in somewhat the same way. Some of us have been very much like those nostalgic types of long, long ago, who all we can do is think of what church used to be like back before COVID. And we long for those days to come back. So much so, in our pining, we've almost become paralyzed. And I think, like the ancient exiles, it is on us to come to the realization that church as we knew it, our experience of coming together as the people of God and ministering, that world in its fullness is gone and gone forever. We will not return to it. Are you saying life will never get back? Of course not. Eventually the pandemic will be over, the limitations and restrictions will be lifted, and we'll be able to gather again. But the pandemic will have changed us, our broader society, the church in the West, and how we do the life of the church, congregational life, and ministry together. It will be different on the other side. So to a certain degree, we have to let the previous world go by and get ready for the world that God has for us. Some of us are like those more ambitious, optimistic exiles who think that this is going to be over quickly. We're going to be back before you know it. Maybe there was some good news as of late. Given the fact that we're talking about variant strains or variant types of viruses and mutations now, and there's some more chatter about there being a third wave down the road, and many people are concerned about this third wave. And even if we're not talking about the pandemic specifically, we've been handing, I don't know if you know this, but we've been handing out free money for the last year. And it is going to take a while to pay some of that back. The implications of that are with us for some time to come. All that to say, friends, with the pandemic being completely behind us, with all its implications, that's not coming any time soon. And I think it is on us to reconcile ourselves with that fact. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. What a gloomy forecast. I came to church today looking for a little bit of bit of encouragement. What are benefits doing with all this guy with all the doom and gloom? He sounds to me a little like the weatherman who on the front end of the weekend says, lots of clouds all weekend long, lots of rain. Maybe not invite that guy back again. And I'm a little sympathetic with you if you feel that way this morning. There is a hard edge to the message, to the word I want to leave with you. But it's not a word of despair. I have come to bring a word of hope. Our God is very much alive, very much active, working out his good purposes in our midst. You know what's often forgotten when we reflect back on the exiles in that 70 years in Babylon? We know it was a hard time, a time of suffering and deprivation. What we forget is that in Jewish history, it is a period of great creativity, probably the greatest creative, innovative period ever amongst the Jewish people. A prolific period when there were lots of new discoveries and changes and wonderful things that took place. While they were in Babylon, it was the period in which the foundations for the whole synagogue system was formed. Up to that time, the religious life revolved around one spot, the temple. But with the synagogue system, the religious life kind of moved into the neighborhood a little more. Anytime there were 10 Jewish males together, you could have a synagogue that allows things to spread out a little more. It was an era that gave rise to the priestly class. To the scribal class, not so much the priestly class, the scribal class. And the scribes were a group of people who, with their work, faithfully transmitted the scriptures from one generation to the next. To a certain degree, we have portions of the Old Testament today because of the faithfulness of those scribes, making sure that the Old Testament scriptures, the law in particular, wasn't lost long ago. And during this time, there was an explosion of the arts among the Jewish people, in particular, poetry. We have portions of the Old Testament that are indebted to this period. Deep, meaningful portions of the Psalms that are with us today that came out of this explosion of the Hebrew poetry. And during this time, there was a period in which the Jewish people rediscovered the daily practices of reading the Bible and praying, and it changed them so that when they came back out of exile, if you read the rest of the Old Testament, you will notice that in the scriptures, Israel, the Old Testament people of God, never returned to their adulterous ways. Idolatry, the practice of idolatry, was completely purged from their way of life. Now, as I think of all the good and creative things that God worked out in the midst during that time, I can't help but wonder how God might be active doing wonderful things in our own era of deprivation under this COVID reality that we find ourselves in. Is there any chance that God could be using the limitations of this time to get us to think about the essence of our faith and how it needs to be lived out faithfully? Or how to pursue mission in a new and fresh way, how to be uniquely the people of God for the day and age in which we find ourselves in. Maybe God is doing that preparative work in our lives right now. If necessity is the mother of all innovation, I can't help but wonder how the Spirit of God might be using the restrictions and the limitations of our own COVID reality to stir our imaginations, to begin to picture new ways, to step into new opportunities that he's putting before us, opportunities that we wouldn't easily have gone through or moved towards before COVID began. God could very much be at work doing those things, making plans. Now, some of you are thinking here this morning, that's great, that sounds optimistic, it sounds wonderful. I'm not sure I can make it. It's been a year already, and I'm wearing down, and I'm not sure I can do this. I think we find in the story of the Hebrew people in exile three invitations for us, three practices that the Lord is putting before us. Number one is the practice of lament as God's people. I think evangelicals in the West, particularly in North America, have been very good in our worship services at making a celebratory noise. And I don't mean noise in a derogatory way. We know how to get together and whoop it up and bring praise to God. What we haven't been good at, thank you, Walter, for the Old Testament story, what we haven't been good at is practicing lament in our lives. For those who aren't familiar with lament, lament is simply the outward expression of the losses that we grieve and the losses that we destroyed is the way that we as a society have moved further and further away from them. I don't know if you've noticed the growth of secularity in the West, but it continues to creep. Part of that's on us, because we live in this society. Maybe we should lament the way that the church itself, in the middle of society, seems to have lost its spiritual fervor. The vitality in the West amongst God's people seems to be at a lower end. We've lost our missional effectiveness. Maybe we just need to name those things and bring them before God as a broken people. Maybe we can name some of our personal losses during this last year. Some of the loss of freedoms, the restriction to move around, to leave our house, to leave our neighborhoods. Those are things that are worth naming and bringing before the Lord. Then there are those that have suffered profound losses. Maybe we need to stand with those and cry out to those who have been shut in our lonely dreams. Say to the Lord, remember these people. And then there's the loss of job, the loss of businesses, by COVID implications. Some of us here know people who have passed away during this time because of COVID. All these things we could bring before the Lord and lift them up and name these things and cry out to Him, Lord, how long? How long? This is what the people of God have done throughout the ages, to lament what we did. The second thing I think we're invited to do is to seek the peace and prosperity of the place which we have been taken captive. Now, for the Old Testament people of God, that was the Babylonians. In Babylon, they were supposed to seek the peace and prosperity of the Babylonian captives. Where have we been taken into captivity? Well, if you consider the freedoms that have been taken away, for the most part, our captivity is our own homes, in our own neighborhoods, with the odd trip out to the store to get groceries off and on throughout this last year. So, who is it that we should seek the peace and prosperity of in that context? Well, I think the church is often guilty of trying to figure out big macro solutions for the situation it finds itself in. Big, hairy, audacious goals that they want to use to rescue the world. I wonder during this season, all we're supposed to do is seek the peace and prosperity of the person of God to heal us. We should be our neighbor. Or that odd stranger that we encounter on the way to the gas station or to that quick jump to the supermarket. Maybe all we're supposed to do during this season is seek the peace and prosperity of those people. Why? Well, if we're followers of Jesus, it's the right selfless, sacrificial thing to do to serve other people like our Master did. But beyond that, in this passage it says, if they prosper, we prosper as well. You want to prosper during this time? You want to experience the storm of God during this time? Seek the peace and the prosperity of the person of God. And the third practice, the third invitation I hear in this text, and that is to seek God. To seek God, fresh intimacy with Him, new fidelity to Him. And the promise in this passage and the story I read to you this morning is, if you'll seek God in earnest, He will allow Himself to be found. You will find God. Fresh way. He is not going to play hard to get. He is not playing hide and seek on you. Search for Him with all your heart during this time. And maybe that's why God has set us aside, pulled us out of our activity, that we might turn our hearts and our minds and our attention back to Him. Seek Him in earnest. I guarantee you, the Lord will come to you and reveal Himself. You will find Him in fresh and meaningful ways. The ancient people of God did this in their exile. God came good on his promise. Eventually, 7 years later, He took the exiles and He brought them back to Jerusalem. Now, it was not back to the city or the temple with its previous glory. It was some heartache with that. But to a certain degree, it didn't matter because Jerusalem, for the ancient people of God, the Israelites, was a symbolic reminder of God's presence dwelling in their midst. It was a reminder that they of all people on the earth were to be His representatives to the world. Wouldn't it be great at the end of this time if somehow or another God poured out His presence, the blessing of His presence on us in such a fresh way that allowed us to one this event, this event, this event, and this event. You get that idea. There's also this word kairos, which is more of a transcendent understanding of time. It has less to do with the movements of our clocks and our calendars and our day planners. It has everything to do with the eternal weightiness of a moment. A moment in which there is wonderful opportunity. Friends, I think in the midst of this pandemic, in the midst of all of its implications, all the havoc it's playing on our lives, yes, this is a time of challenge, but we also stand at the crossroads of opportunity. The Spirit of God is doing things, wants to do a transformative work in our midst. If we will get in step with the things he is doing, see if he doesn't lead us into wonderful discovery and innovation, fresh ways and